Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
On second down, here's a nice move inside 20. Edwards-Helaire, 15, 10, 5, and he's in. Touchdown. The rookie scores.
Mark Vandermeer on the call. That was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, his first career touchdown. If anything, if his career, I should say, ends up being anything like last night, that is the first of many, many touchdowns that he's going to score. He looked really, really good in that game last night. Yep. Ran for a buck 38 and a touchdown, Seth.
Look when good. Will Blackman said that he reminded him of MJD, of Maurice Jones-Drew, I think the thing about that is that Maurice Jones-Drew didn't necessarily have great open field speed. He tended to get caught from behind at times. I don't think that's going to be an issue.
No, he was running away from guys. That's a really good point. Yeah, so he looked really good last night. The Chiefs.
He doesn't have an easily – like MJD also is easy to say his initials. CEH doesn't have the same ring to it. So I think he's going to have that glorious hyphenated name said in full whenever people talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, it sounds – I like it when you say it in full. It sounds very majestic. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It
makes football sound like a more dignified sport.
A little bit. He's classing up the place is what he's doing for sure. So he had a great game last night. The Texans essentially dared the Chiefs to run the football in the first half of that game. So they obliged. They ran the football. They ran it well. And they beat the Texans 34-20 in a game that did not play as close as the final score would indicate. It was 31-7. And then the Chiefs kind of took their foot off the gas pedal. The Texans scored a couple of garbage touchdowns. 34-20, the final score, and they turned their attention to the Ravens. We're going to continue to dig into this game this morning here on the show on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. So, Seth, the Texans had real trouble against the run last night. And you know who would have been really nice to have on this team to defend against the run? Jadeveon Clowney, who is one of the best run defenders in all of football. And according to a story from Mike Florio, the Texans actually got involved in the Clowney discussions towards the very end of his decision-making. It's not clear to what extent, but Florio says he has a well-placed source that says the Texans did inquire to Clowney about possibly coming back to the team that drafted him back in 2014. What do you think?
I would say good for Bill O'Brien for, you know, not letting ego get involved in that or anything. I think the Seahawks are a team that's done this with multiple players where they've said goodbye to a player who wanted more money than the Seahawks thought he was worth, and then end up getting him back a couple years later. And it's a little bit of, hey, no harm, no foul, right? And sometimes that player is kind of learned a little bit. You know, Jamie Collins did it with the Patriots. Yeah. So teams, I think good teams are able to do this, and I think it's a good sign. Now, I don't know, was Clowney open to it? I'm guessing the Texans weren't willing to offer as much as the Titans offered. But I will also say that I would say that Clowney – if they were able to get Clowney for a little bit more money than Randall Cobb, then yeah, I think Clowney would have made more of a difference last night than Randall Cobb.
Seth,
this is going to get super annoying, everybody. I'm warning everybody right now. I am going to be unbearable if 3 weeks from now Randall Cobb is sitting there with like 5 or 6 receptions and that this guy that you paid way more money than I think anybody else was willing to pay him is just sitting there useless. In a game that specifically was made for Randall Cobb. If they take away your deep threats, that's why Randall Cobb is there. That's specifically why Randall Cobb should have gone off last night, and he was completely absent until the fourth quarter in garbage time. So yeah, give me Clowney over Randall Cobb.
That's not exactly where I saw this segment going—a Randall Cobb, Jadeveon Clowney either or.
What did I just tell you, Sean?
No,
you're going to be sick of me. You're going to be sick of me talking about Randall Cobb.
Trust me, I'm heating the one. I can't wait till we talk about the Rockets and you somehow tie James Harden's 3-point shooting last night to Randall Cobb in the Texans game.
Well, funny you should say that, though. My analogy to the Rockets would be playing Vernon Hargreaves as a cover two corner.
Yeah.
He's like, that's like the equivalent of playing small ball. You're just, boy, you got to make up for it somehow because Vernon Hargreaves cannot come up and tackle.
No.
And we saw that. So you're trying to have Vernon Hargreaves play cover two corner in the first half, and the Texans really suffered for it. Yeah, look. Cover two, go ahead, concede the 5-yard catch, but get the guy down on the ground. Don't lunge after him with your 137-pound frame and then watch from behind as he trucks off.
I just want to put a bow on this Clowney thing because, Seth, when someone told me that story last night, I can't remember if it was our boss or Clint Sterner, who we were watching the game in the Verizon Artist Lounge here last night, and they're like, man, did you see this story about the Texans making a run at Clowney at the very end of his free agency journey? Which I thought was ironic. I mean, I know Landry's been clamoring for that all offseason. And this is my first reaction, and keep in mind, we learned that story before the Texans went out and laid a complete egg in Kansas City. So this is a tough morning to say anything real positive about the William O'Brien grand experiment as general manager. But my first reaction was, man, I'm encouraged that Bill O'Brien would entertain something like that, that he would have, to your point, kind of bury the ego, bury the hatchet, have the self-awareness to go, look, this is a guy who's a pretty inexpensive solution for something we need really badly on this football team.
Well, that's where, you know, I gave Rick Smith credit for getting Danielle Manning back the year they let him walk in free agency. And then Danielle Manning ended up being released in training camp, I think, from the Bengals that year.
Yes, something like that.
I can't remember exactly how it went. And, you know, like, I credit Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien at the time, or was that Gary Kubiak at the time?
It was Bill O'Brien. It was Bill O'Brien. Yeah, it was in 2014.
For having a good enough relationship. Sometimes guys' egos are too bruised after something like that.
Yep.
So, maybe in the future it works out with a player other than Clowney or Clowney himself. But I also think that because of all the money Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby spent on guys who frankly are making more money than most teams likely would have paid them, they wouldn't have had the money for an actually good football player like Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
They're paying at this point. Randall Cobb had two receptions last night. So if he gets 32 on the season, will that be worth $9 million a year?
They need to be. They as long as the majority of the other 30 receptions he's going to get this year take place in the first half of football games and not once the Texans fall behind by 24 points.
Yeah.
Time and place.
That's a good point. We have to disqualify those points.
They have to be meaningful
receptions.
That's right. So if you hadn't heard that news, the Texans reportedly made a run at Clowney. I don't know how serious they were about it, but good to see they're at least picking up the phone. Good to see, Seth, that it's not just DTS, but that it's what I like to call DTS-GAF, that guys are dependable, tough, smart, and good at football. I like when they add the GAF in afterwards.
I like to play a little exercise to harass myself sometimes where I go through and look at teams from players from the other team that probably wouldn't pass the DTS standard by Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby's. Tyreek Hill, right? Tyreek Hill's not going to be on this team.
Tyreek Hill did not put up big numbers last night, but if you watch that game, the Texans sure were game planning to make sure Tyreek Hill didn't hurt them, which allowed guys like DeMarcus Robinson and who else? I mean, Travis Kelce is just a great player. He was going to go off anyways. But it allowed some other guys out there to do some things against the Texans, even though Hill wasn't putting up numbers. Sammy Watkins looked like the fourth pick in the draft last night.
Both these teams did what they had the same strategy defensively. You're looking at two teams that have fast receivers going against inadequate defensive backfields.
Right.
So they both said, all right, look, kill us with the underneath stuff, so be it. But if Will Fuller's long reception is 31 yards and he doesn't have any touchdowns, we'll live with 112 yards by Will Fuller. That's going to be too slow to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Texans likewise thought, the Texans were thinking, look, we know that these guys can hang 50-plus on us, and our personnel isn't that much different. So if they kill us slowly, then let's just hope that Deshaun Watson and the offense get it going. The Chiefs killed the Texans' probably, you know, realistically, a little too fast. But the strategy was don't let Tyreek Hill be the guy that kills us with, you know, just huge bombs.
Seth, you're right. Will Fuller had about as unimpactful 112-yard, 8-catch game as I've ever seen. When I, like, after the game is over, I look at the box score, I'm like, Will Fuller had 8 catches for 112 yards? Damn, Will Fuller, statistically, if you had Will Fuller in fantasy, you're like, damn, Will Fuller, nice game. It felt like he caught a few balls. He clearly felt like the best receiver for this team, but it was a completely unimpactful 8 catches for 112 yards.
You know who was the opposite in that? Who? I felt like Jordan Akins had a better game than just 2 receptions because I'm looking at the box score and I'm like, wait a second, was that really only 2 receptions?
Same thing.
But they were so nice. I said after the catch was beautiful.
So I said that in the post game, Seth. I'm like, damn, the 2 catches he had were both memorable. You know what I mean? Yeah. One was a touchdown, and the other one, he made a ninja move to duck underneath a tackle and get some yards after catch. It was pretty cool.
Well, you guys have been talking about how athletic he looked all training camp, and yes. Jordan Akins has always had an underrated ability for those picture-perfect sideline runs after a tight end catches the ball where it's a much larger man stiff-arming guys that he outweighs by 30 pounds. Akins does a good job of that. He has a certain artistry to his game. I'd just like to see it more than twice.
Next time. I would too.
The tight ends in general, I mean, Darren Fells had 2 receptions for 19 yards, and there you go.
There you go. That's a tight end. Cahali Waring ran down on kickoff and punt coverage.
It was glorious.
It was. He was very athletic. He looked athletic running down the field. He damn near looked like a combination of Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski running down and covering kicks. The Ravens come to town a week from Sunday. Things are going to have to get better, but where can they get better with this team heading into what's going to be an equally difficult Week 2 game? Seth and I will dive into that next on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA on Sports Radio 610.
Football Friday is presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA, a monster on and off the field. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
So, Seth, the Texans are going to need to turn the page somewhat quickly. They at least get a few extra days here. I don't know, man. After a game like the one last night, I think I'd rather just go ahead and play it on a normal week than have 3 extra days to think about what just happened in Kansas City. Although they could probably use the 3 extra days to get ready for the opponent that they're going to face. It's the Baltimore Ravens. Seth, as we look at last night, there's so many things that the Texans did wrong last night. What do we feel like the things are that they can get turned around pretty quickly here in order to compete with a really good Ravens team that's going to come to town next week?
You know what? I'll go back to, let's see, was it the 2014 season where they had such an abysmal start to the season?
2015. 2015. They started out 2-5.
And it looked like everybody was going to get fired at the bye week. And then all of a sudden, right before the bye week, on defense especially, they kind of got religion. They started playing better fundamental football. Defensive linemen were just focusing on beating the man in front of them instead of just trying to make the play themselves. Linebackers were coming up and filling. Like, they looked like a better football team fundamentally. I think there's a little bit of that was going on last night that I think the tackling fundamentals can improve very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Especially with a focus on it in practice. I think that some of the personnel decisions are hopefully going to make a difference. You know, Lonnie Johnson was out there in place of Vernon Hargraves in the second half, or at least Lonnie Johnson was out there. Yeah. And it was in place of Vernon Hargraves. And I didn't notice Lonnie Johnson a lot. I'm going to be honest. By the fourth quarter, I was looking down at Rockets and Astros news more than I was watching the actual game.
Seth, do we even know what Lonnie Johnson's snap count was last night? Because it felt like he wasn't on the field. Clint was turning to me and saying, "Was Lonnie Johnson punished for something?" Because I haven't seen him out there the first half, and then he's out there practically the whole time in the second half.
I would imagine. I was looking for snap counts this morning, and nothing's up yet from what I saw. Somebody forward it to me if you see it.
Yeah.
I would imagine he played about most of the second half.
Yeah.
So, just like happened last year, the Texans, even with a preseason, don't seem to do a great job scouting their own personnel. I mean, you go from last year, they're relying heavily on Aaron Colvin to, now we're cutting him just because of the results.
After one week.
Yeah. So I'll continue to be annoyed at the Texans' inability to assess their own staff, but this year, they at least have an excuse in that there was no preseason. So maybe Lonnie Johnson, and I'll have a chance to go back and watch him more closely this afternoon. It's hard because the game was out of hand, so they're not going to be testing the cornerbacks as much in the second half. But I think PJ Hall got a lot of time last night, and it, particularly early on, it looked like Weaver was trying to go with a whole lot more athleticism and not necessarily heavy guys up front, because they were just trying to get a pass rush, trying to stop the deep ball. They didn't care if they gave up some things underneath. That wasn't working out, so he started playing a little bit more conventionally and putting the heavy guys up front. I thought PJ Hall made some really good plays. I'll be able to see in the coaching film how well he did versus double teams and whether he held his gap and all that, but that's, there's going to be some personnel decisions, and some guys are going to have to get some more snaps. Some of the big defensive linemen weren't doing a good job holding their gaps, playing their responsibilities, doing all those things that you got to do if you're going to play loose on the back end. You got to win those battles up front.
So if we're looking at themes on the text page, for instance, here where people are texting in about various things, I mean, obviously there's Bill O'Brien's getting his fair share on the text page, as he does after every game like this. But the one name that's getting mentioned a lot that we have not mentioned yet on the show, and as long as we're talking about this topic, Seth, run defense, the big guys up front, DJ Reader not being out there for this team is getting a lot of mention from people. I think you're the perfect person to comment on this. What the impact of DJ Reader not being on this team, both last night and long term?
This is the thing about DJ Reader, and in the modern NFL especially, it's hard to find big guys who can move like a graceful hippopotamus, and that's what DJ can do. So when you start getting into the zone schemes, when you start doing some of the things that Anthony Weaver wants to do, which is slanting and stunting on the line of scrimmage, you know, disguising your look, lining up in a different gap and then slanting to it at the snap, there aren't a lot of big guys that can do it quite as well as DJ Reader. And for last night's game plan especially, where you're trying to get as many athletes on the field as possible, but you still want to have a couple of big fat dudes up front that can kick ass on their own, there was no DJ Reader out there. And again, I'll go back to Randall Cobb, because my pledge is that I'm going to make Sean sick of me talking about Randall Cobb until Randall Cobb actually shows up. If DJ Reader was $4 or $5 million too expensive, then what the hell is Randall Cobb?
Yeah.
What the hell is the $9 million a year you're paying Randall Cobb if it was too much to pay DJ Reader $15 million a year instead of $11 million a year? Sean, we've got to see something out of this offense. This is the seventh year. This is the seventh year Bill O'Brien has been here. He has yet to be in the top 50% of DVOA for offenses. He has yet to have an actually even competent offense out there, or a better than average offense. And you spent big, big money and exported one of the best players on your offense last year. I'm done talking about Bill O'Brien being on the hot seat, because who the hell knows?
Yeah, that's weird. That's funny you say that, because as I'm going through that game last night, and I'm guessing Houston is kind of feeling this thing too, it doesn't even creep into my mind that these performances like last night, which again, to me, was a 60-minute indictment on the overall architecture of this team that O'Brien and Easterby put together. They made no moves on defense, and the defense stunk last night. They got all these new pieces on offense, and most of them were barely involved in the game plan last night. And the offensive line that they spent the last year and a half reconstructing was not good against a defense that is not a great defense. It was the guys they spent big money on, Seth, we went through the whole list earlier in the show. A lot of them didn't really do anything to make you think that they're going to earn this kind of money. And yet I sit here and I go, but this is what it's going to be. This is how it is.
I do think, too, when I'm watching Anthony last night, Anthony Weaver's defense, and I had multiple people DMing me, asking me good questions about what he was doing out there, because, like, much in the Baltimore style, they do some fun creative stuff at the line of scrimmage where you'll see linebackers lined up over nose tackle, and it freaks you out when it's not working out well. They need to gel and get and understand what they're doing and what Anthony wants them to do as fast as they can. It's going to get better as the season goes along. I saw more good than I feel like talking about on a Monday morning where everybody got their butts whipped. Offensively, the one thing that can improve quickly too, and we've seen this before, is Deshaun Watson getting rid of the ball quickly, which was disappointing because Deshaun had an average 3.14 seconds per drop back last night. And it felt like it was worse than that because he actually started off pretty well early on.
And that's a lot. For those who don't follow that metric very well, that's a lot of time.
If you're over 3 seconds, you're generally one of the slowest to release the ball, which sometimes with Deshaun is fine, right? When he's making stuff happen, that's all right. It just looked like last night when he was trying to make stuff happen, there wasn't anything there. And there looked like there were times where he was holding on to the ball because he just flat out didn't like what he was seeing. Kind of like the Carolina game last year. I think that I can chalk up to it being week one, the offensive line being porous and definitely not ready to play. I think that's going to get better, and I think you'll see a little bit more rhythm out of it. I guess the one, if I were to try to look at a silver lining of something, remember how much they sucked when they were on script last year at the beginning of a game?
Yeah.
They were awful. They couldn't score touchdowns early last year. The first quarter, they were miserable. I thought they actually looked pretty in the second scoring touchdown drive, especially when they were pretty much still on script. I thought they looked pretty well. It was when they went off script that they couldn't figure anything out.
All right, we're going to do headlines in the next segment. We will dig into some Rockets and some Astros when we get to headlines. It was a bad day to be a Houston sports fan yesterday. Astros lose, Rockets lose, Texans lose. A clean sweep for the bad guys yesterday. We will dive into that in headlines. DeAndre Hopkins, not a bad guy, but he is on another team now. He reacted to what he was watching last night. We will share with you what DeAndre Hopkins' reaction was to the Texans' loss in Kansas City last night. We'll do that next. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast on a Football Friday, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. That's next.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
We just got to get guys healthy, get guys, you know, back in, you know, just kind of that rhythm and chemistry, first live action with some new pieces. So, you know, we just got to continue to just keep growing and keep learning and watch the film, correct the mistakes, and just get ready for next week. But those guys are coming.
Seth, I was saying last night, we were playing some of the cuts from Deshaun Watson on the postgame show last night. Clint Sterner and I were. And Deshaun's a very easygoing guy. And I think Deshaun's easygoing nature is probably one of those things that after a game like last night probably frustrates some fans. You know, people get angry. They want the players to be just as angry as they are. And Deshaun can sound a little, you know, big picture, not that bothered by the game. Now, he's at times sounded bothered by certain games and certain performances, but that was a big stage last night where I think a lot of people were really excited going into that game, hoping for at least some measure of revenge, and it could not have gone worse for the Houston Texans. I think what I would tell fans is that level of calm and cool after a loss like that, just know that it works the other way, where Deshaun probably doesn't get too high after the wins either, which is probably a good thing too.
He's a non-dopey Eli Manning, where forever for the Eli Manning, it was like, oh my gosh, he's just clueless. It's like he doesn't even get fired up or anything. Right. Where's the leadership?
Does he even
After he won a Super Bowl, it turned into, my goodness, he's so calm and cool under
That's
pressure.
So
Look
true.
At him. Nothing rattles him. It's incredible.
Right, right. When you're successful and you're a little strange, you're eccentric. When you're not successful and you're strange, you're a weirdo.
He's somewhere between, like, okay, Eli Manning is probably, aside from his whatever it is, Eli Manning's a smart guy. Like, he's actually like a legitimately intelligent dude. He just has this dopey quality to him somehow.
Does.
But yeah, Eli's kind of got the right demeanor in a lot of ways, but I think Deshaun is more of a natural leader than Eli Manning. I actually knew somebody that did some work with the New York Giants with leadership training and everything, and Eli like specifically was working on that stuff for things that I don't think Deshaun has to work on. But like Nick Foles is the one that was unbearable to Jaguars fans. Remember last year, Nick Foles they'd have a horrendous game, and Nick Foles would come in, and it was basically like he was delivering a sermon to the press and the fans, saying, hey, let's keep things in perspective. Yeah. This really shouldn't even matter in the grand scheme of things, because after all, it's all about getting to heaven. Everybody's like, shut the hell up.
You have your health.
Yeah.
Just be thankful you have your health. Nick, you guys are 1-8. Yeah, just be thankful you have your health, though. So,
God wants me to hold you to a higher standard, Nick. Don't stand up here and tell me about God right this moment.
Right.
God is disappointed in you. Yeah.
Speaking of thankful, did you see what DeAndre Hopkins tweeted last night at 11:17 p.m., right about the time the game was ending or the post-game press conferences were sort of wrapping up. Did you see what he tweeted last night?
I saw perfectly. Okay. You know, like what? There's like 78 self-help books out there saying that the key to happiness in this life is to be grateful.
It is.
And that's what he merely tweeted, the word grateful.
So you think it might have just been a coincidence at 11:17 p.m. on a night where the Texans fell behind 31-7 and Deshaun Watson was throwing to miniature wide receivers as if they were 6'3", 220 like DeAndre Hopkins is. You think that he just happened to be grateful at that time of night and decided to tweet about it? And for DeAndre Hopkins tweeted a one-word tweet at 11:17, just one word, grateful, as Seth said.
He probably was reading one of the books that Jack Easterby doles out. Like that's what all the self-help gurus talk about these days. Be sure you practice gratitude all the time, all day long. Tell everybody how happy you are about everything.
Okay.
So that's because look, if Easterby's motivational ploys are going to work at some point, you got to think that it probably rubbed off on DeAndre Hopkins a little bit.
I'm sure he created a monster. I'm sure,
He's probably got one of those awkwardly worded quotes that Easterby tries to sell off on Twitter, something like, "The true meaning of gratitude comes in your darkest moment whereupon the challenges come to light and you find yourself, alas, Jack Easterby." So that's all it was.
Odds that Jack Easterby retweets DeAndre Hopkins tweeting how grateful he is.
No, he's too busy giving Randall Cobb a pep talk. "Hey, buddy, hey, don't worry about it. Be sure you don't turn on the radio and listen to all those things. You didn't actually only have two receptions in garbage time in the game. You're a champ. Yeah. That's what you are, buddy. You're a shining star." Just like Brandon Cooks.
What they call two receptions, I like to call 25 routes that you ran.
Yeah. you don't.
So
how can we repurpose? You miss all the shots you don't take.
That's right. Yeah.
You're not gonna get those two receptions if you don't run a whole bunch of meaningless routes get there.
That's right. So DeAndre Hopkins tweeting grateful last night. So DeAndre to some degree clearly has not let it go. What I would remind DeAndre Hopkins though is that eventually the Cardinals are gonna have to play games as well. It ain't like he's playing for the Baltimore Ravens right now. Like DeAndre tweeting how, you know, grateful as he's watching the Texans get their asses handed to them. You know, keep in mind, DeAndre, you're playing for a team that, if history is any sort of indicator, you're going to be, no offense, Ocho, our loyal listener who is the most diehard Cardinals fan out there, because I know the texts are about to hit us here. Just keep in mind that you play for the Arizona Cardinals and you are eventually going to have to play football games this season. And it's not like you're on a team that's going to go 12-4 this year. Keep in mind your gratitude when you're getting your asses handed to you by the Seahawks and the 49ers on the regular.
I don't know. I don't think their offense is necessarily going to have their asses handed to them. Kyler Murray played pretty damn well towards the as the season went along there last year.
He did.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
As far as throwing shade goes, I suppose where are we in that process there? I don't get angry about it. I saw a lot of people really angry about that last night. I mean, this comes down to whose version of events you choose to believe. I mean, there's the one theory that DeAndre Hopkins wanted a trade and that's why they had to trade him, or wanted a pay raise and that's why they had to trade him. There's the other theory that DeAndre presented, which is, "I only asked for a pay raise because I heard they were trying to trade me, so I was like, let me get the hell out of here anyway."
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's all I know is that DeAndre Hopkins isn't here and Randall Cobb is.
Seth is going to try to tie Randall Cobb into every segment of the show between now
and the end of holy crap.
What?
Okay, Jack Easterby 17 hours ago. Yeah. What time would that be?
That would be 17 hours ago would be, let's see, 12 hours ago is 7:30 last night. So that'd be around 2:30 in the afternoon. Yesterday.
Oh, okay. So he tweeted thankful at 2 in the afternoon.
Really?
DeAndre Hopkins responds after the loss maybe with grateful. I choose to believe he's responding to Jack Easterby.
I hope to God he's responding to Jack Easterby. That would be hilarious if he were mimicking Jack Easterby on Twitter. That would be
Jack Easter Hatchet.
Can you imagine if DeAndre Hopkins started retweeting Brandon Cooks? That would be the ultimate troll right there. Because we know that's Easterby's favorite hobby on Twitter is to retweet Brandon Cooks. If DeAndre Hopkins also started retweeting Brandon Cooks, that would be a great low-key troll. I would like that. That would be good.
I feel good. I feel like now there's a lot of people tuning in right this moment that haven't had 2 hours to talk their way through a lot of this nonsense like we have. This is where I am with Bill O'Brien.
Okay.
I've seen him in this situation before. Remember, I shot a video from underneath my bed a couple years ago.
I do. It was really funny.
after a ridiculously bad start. Now, that was after several games of misery.
It was 0-3 to start the year that year. Yep.
They're 0-3. They turned it around. I guess the question, and this is where some of the depression sets in for Texans fans, it's, yes, he's been able to turn it around before, but never to the point where, oh, yeah, and now they have a scary offense.
Right.
Or, oh, and yeah, now they're genuine contenders. Or, oh, yeah, now they're not going to get destroyed in their exit game in the playoffs. It's a matter of, okay, you can rebound. I have no doubt in my mind that Bill O'Brien will rebound from this and that they'll be a better football team. Maybe after the Ravens game. I can't promise you anything for 9 days
eventually
from now. Yeah. But like over that's generally what Bill O'Brien teams do. It's that you're also the general manager now, and it's not enough when you spend this much money on offense and when you ship DeAndre Hopkins off for the good of the team, supposedly, that it can't be this. That Chiefs defense is not likely to be nearly as good as the Steelers or the Ravens defense. So you got to figure some things out right quick.
Yeah, I think the big difference, Seth, if we're peeping ahead at these next couple of games, the Texans, by the oddsmaker standards, should start the season 0-3 just like they did back in 2018. I think the big difference for Bill O'Brien between this and back in 2018 when they started out 0-3 is that, one, the schedule is still pretty unforgiving even after these first three games. The next four games include the Vikings, the Titans, and the Packers, who were all playoff teams last year. That's all before the bye week. That's number one. Number two is that back in 2018, I don't want to say you had an excuse, but it wasn't your show in its entirety. This is Bill O'Brien's show. You know, when you looked at that team in 2018, you could still look at it and go, okay, well, there's a lot of Rick Smith still kind of baked into this roster. Brian Gaines, a general manager, and they're coming off of his first draft, a draft where they didn't have a first and a second round pick because Rick Smith was so busy fixing his issues at quarterback. He had to trade a second to get rid of Brock Osweiler. He had to trade a first to move up and get Deshaun Watson. So there was not nearly as much blame to be assigned to O'Brien in its entirety as there is now. The big difference now, Seth, is that this is Bill O'Brien's castle, the whole thing. And I know Easterby is his right-hand man, but this is when it comes to picking and choosing who's on this roster, who gets paid, who doesn't get paid, who gets paid and how much they get paid. Yeah, I get it. Easterby's the guy that's sitting in there with the pencil making sure the numbers all work out and everything. None of these decisions get made without Bill O'Brien rubber stamping them, is my feeling on this situation. Like, I don't think Easterby walks in and says, hey, Bill, look, just signed Randall Cobb to a three-year, $27 million deal. These are all O'Brien's moves. And the more and more guys he moves out that were Gain guys and Smith guys, and they continue to tumble, you know, from last year into this year, this has slowly become almost in its entirety Bill O'Brien's roster. That, to me, is the biggest difference. When he went 0-3 a few years ago, the schedule was more forgiving. I thought they were going to turn it around. They were competitive in those games. They weren't competitive last night, and they better be competitive. They better win at least one of these next two games, quite honestly. That's the big difference to me, is that this is all O'Brien now.
It's all O'Brien, I guess. But the image that I think a lot of people get is it's all O'Brien with Jack Easterby giving him a shoulder rub, being like, you can do it, buddy. You can mold this team in your vision of tough, smart, and dependable players. Don't worry too much about the actual football playing ability because the culture will take care of it all. Did you see what I did with that culture in New England? You know, like there's that whole – I don't know. Did you ever watch Silicon Valley, the TV show?
I have not.
I watched like the first two seasons of it, and I lost interest. But there's like a CEO there who's got this little guru guy next to him who is totally in it for the money, you know, but like whispers all the motivational sayings into his ear and gets him to see greater things. And he's a complete charlatan. That's the image that people worry about when they see some situation where a guy who is the Kansas City Chiefs, by the way, he was the Kansas City Chiefs team pastor in 2013, Jack Easterby was. And that's why I wondered last night whether, like, man, I wonder if Kansas City's really regretting not holding on to Jack Easterby and promoting him to their executive vice president of football operations. I wonder if they're like, oh, boy, how could we not realize that we had this guy in our grasp?
Yeah.
Just like the Texans had Kyle Shanahan at one point.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
So it's Bill O'Brien making the decisions, but what the hell is Jack Easterby? I don't even know what he is still.
Can I just tell you that you mentioning Kyle Shanahan just merely being in the building at one point gave me a sort of a, a gut punch that I wasn't expecting at 7:43 in the morning. Like, that didn't, that felt bad. That felt really bad, you just saying that. Right? But I'm just picturing Deshaun Watson running Kyle Shanahan's offense. Holy smokes. Oh,
it's, I mean, like, honestly, the way Bill O'Brien is operating, you got to look at some of these contracts that have been doled out. Yes, I love the idea of having a great culture on the team. But, man, there's such a thing as the going rate for things, the market rate. And when you're trying to spend judiciously and put together a team, you got to figure out, where are we going to spend all this money and on what kind of people is it going to be? The nice thing about really high character dudes is that generally they don't get paid their market, well, like probably what their actual worth is, because the market doesn't reward it. So don't be the guy that's going to somehow reset the market on character guys. Right. You can get the character guys abound in the NFL. You can find them. You don't have to pay a premium for them.
Yeah. Seth, how many weeks, if it goes on like this, till we start talking about Bill O'Brien? I guess I shouldn't say how many weeks, because there were people wondering it last night during the Kansas City game, during the postgame show, wondering if Bill O'Brien had taken over play calling in the second half of the game.
I know.
From Tim Kelly. And
George Godsey lost his after the third game in 2016.
Okay. That was after the New England Thursday night game where they got shut out, where Jacoby Brissett was quarterback. That was when Brady was serving his Deflategate suspension.
Sean, I had to watch that game. I was at this charity function. Yeah. It was Wade Smith was having this charity function, but it was at this like fancy nightclub bar, one of these like rooftop type places that I feel very uncomfortable in. A lot of fancy folk. Yeah. And I'm trying to watch that game and completely ignore every jackass around me. I might have been the worst person in the universe to be at a social occasion at that point.
Seth,
like at a charity event, especially.
I'm sorry, Wade.
I might have actively hurt the bottom line of your charity that night.
Socially, there is nothing worse than being out and about when there is a sporting event going on TV that you have a deep rooted invested interest in, Your example is similar to my. When I'm out and about somewhere and I've got money on a game and I'm at a bar and it's a bar where there's listeners out there and stuff like that, and they know that I've got money on a game and they come up and they ask, so do you have money on this game, and you're losing your bet, I want to slap the lips off their face. And most of the time they're being nice people. They're not trying to be mean, but I'm just like, get away from me, please. Just leave. Get away. I'm losing my ass right now.
Sean, this was even worse. This was like a guy in a pair of $5,000 shoes trying to tell me about his place in Ibiza. It was that kind of crowd. I was just, I wasn't having it, man. I wasn't having it.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been happy if the Texans were up 26-0 in
that
game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So George Godsey got it ripped from him 3 games into 2016. I think Tim Kelly's got a longer rope than George Godsey. He's also got a much better quarterback than George Godsey. I think that's going to help. He's got Deshaun Watson. George Godsey had Brock Osweiler that year. But there was nothing really about that game other than early on. You pointed this out. A lot of screens early on in the game, too. You know, I thought some of the things they did early in the game looked a little different and a little creative and a little like they were realizing what their personnel was and taking advantage of it. But then it didn't. You know, it kind of settled into the old stuff.
They can build on some. Like, again, they're going to be better than they were last night. And the Chiefs' offense is extremely good. There were some things, and Collinsworth was trying to give some credit to the Texans' defense by the end of the game, where you look and you say, okay, there's 31 points. I mean, there's more. It's only 31 points. There's more to the story than that, because the Chiefs took the foot off the gas a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that I did, as angry as I was and am, and as frustrated as I am, like, there's a lot to build on in that game. And a lot of them are very, very fixable, and I've seen them fix some of these issues before. So I expect a more competitive game 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, 2 weeks from now.
We'll see where I am like Wednesday before the Ravens game.
Okay.
We'll see how I feel about them being better this next week.
I think that's fair. I would just give Randall Cobb a word of warning that it's going to take Seth till Wednesday to start feeling good again. So just, I mean, Randall Cobb, I wouldn't listen to Payne and Pendergast if I were you.
I hope, man, maybe Randall Cobb, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Randall Cobb comes out on fire in the second game. Yeah. I'm open to it.
From your lips to God's ears. Let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
As you can tell, the Texans lost last night. 34-20, they lose to the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. Started out well. They took a 7-0 lead, and then it didn't go very well. The Chiefs scored the next 31 points. So at one point, if you went back to the 10-minute and 45-second mark of the playoff game last year in Arrowhead Stadium. There was a period of football, if you go back to that point in that game, through the early second half of the game last night, where the Chiefs had outscored the Texans 82-14 over the course of parts of two games, in two consecutive games in the same stadium. Bill O'Brien, what were your thoughts on that game last night?
Yeah, we just, first half, we had trouble stopping a run, and the time of possession was not good, which involves the offense too. But we got to play the run better, obviously. And then we came out in the second half, and they scored on that first drive, and that was tough because we needed a stop there to do it, but to get the ball back to the offense. I thought the guys fought. You know, they at the end, we were able to score a couple touchdowns there at the end, but it was too little too late. So there's some things to build on, but we got a long way to go here, obviously, and we got to get going, and we have to improve very quickly.
Seth, there were major issues on defense. I think there are fixable issues on both sides. I think the one issue that's not fixable is they're talent deficient on defense. They didn't fix it in the offseason, and I don't think they're going to be able to fix it. They're not going to become more talented during the season. I think the one thing I was most disappointed about offensively was just the lack of urgency that they played with once they got behind in this game. They were slow getting to the line. They were letting clock run. Tim Kelly is called. They get down 24-7 to start the second half. Tim Kelly's calling plays like they're trying to run the damn clock out, and they're up 24-7. They're calling runs up the middle.
Yeah.
They're slow getting the line. Deshaun Watson gets to the line with 25 seconds left in the third quarter and the clock running and lets the clock run out. Like, there was just this overall malaise and just sort of a la-di-da about the offense. Look, that was very – and I don't know if it's concerning because I think it's fixable, but it was infuriating is what it was.
Well, it looked like – and again, this is where – I mean, I would imagine this – like, Bill O'Brien, does he understand that this is what a Bill O'Brien offense looks like in people's minds? I mean, the Tom Brady days are long in the rearview mirror. And when people think of a Bill O'Brien offense, I don't think that looks any different than what people anticipate or expect out of it. Like, it's just not quite snapping and popping the way it should. Now, the Chiefs, I don't even want to compare them to the Chiefs because that's a whole different echelon of offensive football. But the little things that you can do, whether your talent is good or not, they fail to do it. It looks like they're trudging their way through life most of the time, even when things are going good. And, yeah, that's largely is what people think of with a Bill O'Brien offense. It's been 7 years now of watching pretty much that same thing.
Yeah, and you have one of the top five quarterbacks, at least from a talent standpoint, maybe if not productivity from a talent standpoint, you have one of the top five quarterbacks in all of football. You can't, Seth, yeah, you can't just have given $40 million a year to your quarterback and you come out and things look exactly the same as they've looked the last couple years with this team. You know what? How about this? Be as good as Minnesota, right? We're not asking you to be Baltimore from last year, who was first in DVOA. We're not even asking you to be Kansas City right now. Someday that would be nice. You know, now that you've invested all this money in this draft capital and now that you've got a quarterback, that would be nice if you could be first or third in DVOA like Kansas City was last year, or fourth like New Orleans is seemingly every year, fifth like Seattle. You know, those are all teams that have quarterbacks that are on the echelon of Deshaun Watson. The Texans were 17th in DVOA. You know, just be as good as Minnesota, who was 10th. Be as good as Las Vegas, who was 9th. The Raiders were 9th in DVOA last year. Just be that good. That would be nice.
Yeah.
That would be pleasant.
Well, and again, as you pointed out, look, you spent all that money on the offense. You shipped out DeAndre Hopkins. You neglected the defense in the offseason. Like, the general manager neglected the defense in the offseason. And the defense might be the only one that I actually could say looked better in this game than in the Kansas City game.
Yep.
The offense, you spent all that money, and they didn't look better at all.
Now,
I say better, it's not like the defense looked awesome or anything, but it was a little bit more of a slow bleed at least.
Yeah. That's a great point, Seth. I mean, not only did you spend a lot of money, you made some moves where people are like, what the hell are you doing? You're like, what? You're 17th in DVOA. Let's fix this offense. And you fix it by trading DeAndre Hopkins for a second-round pick and for David Johnson. Okay. We're going to talk plenty more about the Texans. We need to touch on the other teams that broke our hearts last night. Let's start with the Rockets, who their season is on serious life support right now, and it could flatline tomorrow night in Game 5 against the Lakers in the Orlando bubble. The Rockets, who took a 1-0 lead in this series, feels like it was about 2 months ago. The Lakers once again winning by double digits last night, 110-100 in the Orlando bubble. Seth, we will both admit we did not watch the game last night because we were busy watching the Texans game. We had a pregame show to do that the game had already started, and I had a postgame show to do. So you and I will react to this game merely by looking at the box score. So here are my hot takes on the Rockets game just by looking at the box score and not having watched a single minute of the game. Damn, James Harden, what the hell? Why are you out here just only taking 11 shots? You're 2 for 11 from the field, but at least you played pretty good defense because you were the only starter that didn't have a negative plus minus. PJ Tucker, what the hell, man? You didn't show up at all. He put up an 0-for last night, Seth. He didn't score any points. How can you go lose this game, Rockets? Boy, if you get that kind of productivity from the bench, 14-9-9 from Rivers, McLemore, and Green, this should be a game that you win when you get this kind of productivity from the bench. Those are my hot takes based on merely looking at the box score of this game.
Okay.
Boom. Yeah.
What were the give me the 3-point line?
For the
team.
The 3-point percentage?
Yeah.
14 of 33 from 3-point. They were 42% from 3-point range last night.
Yeah, I know, but which is, look, they take good shots. It almost is a compliment to the fact that the Rockets don't actually just gun up threes because they're lazy or anything. Or at least at times they lapse into that. But for the most part, they're selective in their shots, and they take good 3-point shots. The Lakers have said, okay, we understand that, we realize that, and we're gonna make you work for your 3-pointers. So this is two games in a row now where they've taken 3-point attempts in the 30s, and it's a pretty damn good strategy. I have to credit Frank Vogel and the rest of their crew.
Yeah, it's weird to say
assistant
that.
Assistant coach Frank Vogel and head coach LeBron James.
The issue for the Rockets is, to me, if I'm looking at that box score, the number of threes taken. Forget about what their percentages are. They only took 33. They're only taking 33. That's a big problem for this basketball team. So they're down 3-1 in this series. And
I long for the – look, Sean, I'm a traditionalist. I long for the old days when, you know, you could count on your team to take 50, 60 three-point attempts in a game.
Yeah.
None of this newfangled, you know, balanced approach.
Yeah, mid-range jumpers and attacking the rim. It's never going to work. The Astros, as we shift gears, boy, what a rough day in Houston. 0-3 yesterday, and the Astros kicked it all off with the appetizer yesterday, losing 3-1 to the Oakland A's, a series in which they lost 4 of 5. Seth, the Astros are now under 500 at the latest point in the season since they were a mediocre baseball team in the first half of the season back in 2016. They are 22-23. But thankfully, because baseball has expanded their postseason, 22-23, and second place in the AL West would be good enough to make the postseason if the season ended today. So they lose 3-1 to the Oakland A's. The big story in this game, they couldn't hit. They had 2 hits all night, and the top 6 guys in the order, most of whom are the big names. You know, Altuve's really the only one who wasn't in the lineup where you go, okay, this is their core out there playing. Springer was in the lineup. Bregman's in the lineup. Tucker's been their best hitter this year. He was in the lineup. Correa, Gurriel, Brantley, all in the lineup. They were 0-for. They were 0-for-20, those guys, last night or yesterday afternoon in that game. Seth, if I look at the Astros, I go, okay, there's a bunch of pieces here where you can kind of get excited about the team if they string some wins together. The problem for me with the Astros, they just can't beat good teams. You know what I mean? Like, they're total lamb killers. Like, there's nothing that they've done since Justin Verlander got hurt at the very beginning of the year where I look at this team and I go, okay, yeah, this is a team that's ready to stand in toe-to-toe with good teams in the postseason.
Where do you stand on, hey, once they get these guys back, once these guys are healthy, once such and such comes around, as long as they're healthy in the playoffs, then they've got a swinging shot.
Who's left?
It is baseball after all.
Yeah, I'm not saying this to say there's nobody left. I'm saying it's a good question. Who's on that list of guys that aren't back and playing right now where we feel like, okay, now they've got a better chance in the postseason? Obviously, Verlander, depending on what he looks like, and he apparently was doing some throwing 50 to 55 pitches on the side, so he seems to be trending in a direction where Chandler Rome might have some splaining to do at some point because it looks like Verlander might pitch again. Lance McCullers obviously is a guy like that. But Seth, most of the guys in the lineup that they're going to have for the postseason other than Altuve are in the lineup right now. They're back and they're healthy. Bregman's been activated. I think the only guys left that fit that bill of guys who they're going to get back that would materially change how we feel about this team are Verlander and McCullers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my answer is not great because neither of those guys were – you know, Verlander's got an arm issue, and McCullers hasn't pitched well this year.
This is you know, damn the coronavirus, Sean. It's just, it's finally hitting me that, you know what? People's lives have been changed because of this thing. And it's mostly, it didn't hit me until right now. Sure, hundreds of thousands of lives lost, yes. But Sean, we had three losses in one day because there has to be basketball played right at the same time as baseball and football.
Yeah, I think.
Why? Why have you forsaken me, yeah, Jack Easterby?
Right, Randall Cobb. I think that's the big question, Seth, is what's Randall Cobb going to be able to do once the playoffs roll around in Major League Baseball? How is Randall Cobb going to somehow help the Houston Astros win a baseball?
For those who are just tuning in,
Randall Cobb is basically the target of Seth's ire this morning.
I'm just saying, yesterday was about as miserable as it comes for just a weekday of watching sports with only one playoff game involved. Where it wasn't just, look, usually a baseball loss is a baseball loss, but man, every single one of these Astros losses as of late has been a dagger through your heart because it just feels like, wow, it's really slipping away potentially, isn't it? Then the Rockets, obviously, it's the playoffs. It hurts. And then the lost in pretty much the same fashion as the last time I watched you play football.
Yeah.
I'm growing more and more miserable this morning as I think about all this.
Well, I would say that, well, Seth, I think it's safe to feel that way because I think what yesterday someone points out on the text page, Yordan Alvarez. May I know they're missing Yordan Alvarez. Seth's question was, what could they get back to make me feel better about the postseason? To quote Rick Pitino, Yordan Alvarez ain't walking through that door. Seth, you raise a good point as we go through headlines here, and we talked about the Texans and the Rockets and now the Astros. It wasn't just the records of these teams that took a hit yesterday. It was hope that took a big hit yesterday. You know, the Astros falling under 500 is a statistical milestone. Maybe milestone's not there. Maybe a benchmark where you go, oh, crap, this really isn't a very good baseball team at all right now. The Rockets losing to the Lakers essentially ended their season last night. And the Texans, man, you would have at least hoped that they cover the spread. You would have at least hoped that we come in today and you go, know what? They stood in toe-to-toe with the best offense in football, and they lost 37-31. And I feel pretty good about this team going into the Baltimore. You can take the music down, John, as we tell you that you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station. Seth, I don't think I'm being homerish by saying this. There was a formula for this team where they could have started the season 0-2, and I would still feel pretty good about the season moving forward. And yeah, I'm not saying fold up tents, the season's over. Kansas City's going to do what they did last night to the Texans, to a lot of teams this year, but I don't think they're going to do it to a lot of good teams this year. And I think there was a formula where you go, look, it's the Chiefs and the Ravens, you know, and it's early in the season, and maybe they're on point with their game. They're bringing back way more pieces that they had last year than the Texans are offensively. It would stand to reason that these teams looked a little more in sync than the Texans would in the first two games of a season that you're playing amidst the pandemic. Just stand in and trade with these guys. Look like you are maybe not the exact equal, but you look like if you gotten a break here or a break there, you could have gone into Kansas City and won that game. Seth, that was an FBS. That was a Group of Five team playing a Power Five team last night, yeah, is what it was. And so this is veering towards an 0-2 where we're really going to start to have major questions about this team. And again, with all three of these teams, Astros, Rockets, Texans, your point is a great one. It wasn't just that they lost. It's that hope took a big kick in the junk last night.
It was that the Astros are now only two games ahead of the Seattle Mariners in the division.
Yes.
The Astros, I mean, now the Astros are playing some patsies to close out the season. And it would be still a huge, it would be a huge surprise if they don't make the playoffs. It's just, it's worth pointing that out. And the Mariners are better than they've been, obviously. But you're only two games ahead. You're well past the midway point of a shortened season, and you're only two games ahead of the Mariners. That's where we find ourselves in baseball. And this year was supposed to be, if not a redemption tour, it was supposed to be take that, rest of baseball. Say what you want about 2017, but we're a damn good baseball team. And these guys haven't been cheating for the last 2 years. But now your defense is, like, that defense is basically never going to be heard by anybody. I don't even care about defending them as much as I just wanted to stick it in people's faces that the Astros were still a really good baseball team.
Yeah.
And as of right this moment, they are not.
I guess, Seth, my question would be, as we start to think about this, as we talk to you here on a Football Friday, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA, Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610, download the radio.com app. You can rewind to the beginning of the show if you're just tuning in with us. as we're talking about all three of these teams and the horrible day that yesterday was in Houston sports, and we're mixing hope into the conversation, of the three teams, which one do you feel is sort of veering towards a dead end where you go, you know what, these guys are heading towards a conclusion where there really is no hope to get to where they want to go? I've got an answer to that, but I'm curious if yours match of the Astros, the Rockets, and I'm not talking about hope just for this season. I'm talking about hope that there is a title run at some point, or at least a drive to relevance. Astros, Rockets, Texans, which is the one that you feel is the one that's maybe the most futile right now of the three?
The Texans.
Okay.
Because look, all the moves that YOLO Bill made were really relatively short-term moves. Yeah. It's not like you have you can either call it a good thing or a bad thing that all this money you're spending on Randall Cobb and Brandon Cooks and all these other guys who so far haven't produced a drop. At the very least, you're not tied to them long-term. The problem is that you don't have any draft picks with which to replenish them. So extreme long-term, I feel good about Deshaun Watson.
Right.
I think you're going to be fine with Deshaun Watson. It's just that the Texans were trying to stop being as top-heavy a team. The problem was that they got rid of some of the top-heavy part and didn't genuinely replenish. This is what happened, Sean. Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby thought, look, we need to have layers and layers of players. So what we need to do is have a more well-rounded roster. How do we do that? Okay, well, look, we'll make some hard decisions. We'll get rid of the more expensive players that are star players, and then we'll fill out the middle class. This is the problem. You don't fill out the middle class simply by paying more money to your average players.
Yep.
It's like they felt like if we pay a bunch of average players a lot of money, they'll perform up to expectations of their salary. That's not the way it works. And so now what they have is a team that's spending way too much money on a lot of average players instead of at the very least spending way too much money on some really, really good players.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm frustrated with them. The Astros, I think the Astros pitching pipeline is better than people thought it was. I think we've seen that this year, right? I mean, see, even some of these guys that have skidded at times still have some good trade value in them. I think that Kyle Tucker has come into his own. I think that depending on what Verlander's injury is, I'd kind of written Verlander off for next season, and now it looks like, well, hell, it's not a Tommy John likely, right? So maybe he's going to play next season. I still feel relatively positive about the Astros. A big part of it for them is just having their star players actually hit the way they're capable of hitting and staying healthy.
Yeah. Mine, Seth, is the Rockets, and here's why. Because if you ask me the question, if I'm asking myself the question, who – of these three teams, where do I feel like the title window is at right now for these teams? Just an overall title window where I feel like this team can win a championship. To me, the Rockets are the one where I feel the most futile, and I'll go through the other two first to illustrate my point. I think the Astros, to your, especially if Verlander is ready to come back in 2021, but even if he's not, I feel like the Astros still have one more run left in them somewhere. You know, they're going to bring Greinke back next year. Maybe McCullers straighten things out. I agree with you that the pitching, at least at the tippy-top tier of the minor league system and the young guys they have on this staff, I feel like there's enough solutions in place, maybe through free agency and whatnot, for the Astros to have one more title run in them in 2021. I don't think it's happening this year, even though the playoffs are very forgiving. So I don't feel like the window is closed on the Astros. It's closing, but I don't feel like it's closed. The Texans, I don't think, are a Super Bowl contender right now. However, you've got a great young quarterback, and let's face it, if things don't work out, my sense is that Cal McNair is less patient than his dad, and that I don't think Bill O'Brien is going to be given 2 or 3 years to see this plan play forward. And there's enough pieces in place on this team where I feel like if you had somebody more capable making the big picture decisions and coaching this team, and I'm not saying O'Brien can't become that guy. I'm just saying week one, this is how it's going to look. Then obviously this is a season that's going nowhere right now. So I feel like the Texans at least have the quarterback in place where you feel like there is long-term hope with some head coach and some GM and some semblance of talent around him. The reason why the Astros are the answer to me for the one where I feel like the window is closed is because this is who they are. Nobody's trading for Russell Westbrook, and I don't think they're trading James Harden. And I think if they do trade James Harden, then they're taking 3 steps back to try to take 5 steps forward, and there's going to be no championship contention at all over the next few years. And oh, by the way, LeBron James is in your conference, and so is Kawhi Leonard. Like, to me, the Rockets' title window is slammed shut right now.
You got to remember, though, Sean, and I think this is where sometimes we're prisoners of the moment. The Rockets are not married to super small ball long term. I think that just Clint Capela was not the center for for this team with Russell Westbrook on it. But there are other centers and big men that can be better matches, even if it's a maybe it's small ball, but it's with a power forward playing center, like an actually tall power forward playing center, however you want to call it. They're not married to this. So I'm going to wait and see in the how long is free agency going to be this year? Is it like 2 weeks of free agency?
Like 3 hours. They just announced the draft is going to be on November 18th, and they have no idea when the season's starting in the NBA next year.
So November 18th, free agency will be going on presumably at some time.
Right,
like
around – usually free agency starts like a week after the draft.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to wait in baseball and basketball. So – or well, you don't have to wait for – they might have to start it. Anyway, I think there's still room to get a more conventional-looking team, but just with a stretch center or a stretch four, and that maybe you can't compete both. You can compete in more ways than just having to scamp around being demons all over the place and burn out after three games.
Yeah, I may be a little bit of a prisoner of the moment with the Rockets, Seth. I just feel like for the first time since James Harden got here, I don't know what the next move is. You know what I mean? Like they went, we knew when James got here that they were going to go try to find another superstar. They went and got Dwight Howard, and we all thought that was a great move at the time. It didn't work out. And then they made some moves with some cap space to put a good team around James, and they won 55 games. That felt good. It wasn't good enough. They went and got Chris Paul. We didn't see that one coming.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, where did you feel before the Chris Paul move? Did you not feel like, I don't know what the next move is?
I did feel that way a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, because you said that this is the first time that you felt that way. I feel like people felt that way before the Chris Paul.
I did. I guess maybe coming into it, because I don't know, and maybe let me rephrase it then, because that's a fair point that you're making. I don't know what the move is to give me hope going into next year. You're right. I have felt that way before. Like, boy, you're right. Coming off of that 55-win season where they signed Gordon and they signed Ryan Anderson, and you go, okay, James just cashed it in a home playoff game, they lost by 40 to a Spurs team that didn't have Kawhi. Boy, what's the move here? And Daryl Morey pulls a rabbit out of his hat. So you're right about that. I did feel that way. But I don't know what the move is where they're going to make me feel better about this team. I don't see what the move is because, Seth, the cap's going to go down, and they spent all this money on Westbrook, Harden, and Eric Gordon.
I know. And I don't want to say, hey, trust in Daryl like that. It's too easy to say this. But, again, I'm going to give you one more instance. Last year, were you not worried about, okay, what the hell did we do with Chris Paul's contract? Now, look, we can talk about whether that was the right thing to feel or not, but at that point, that was the big deal, right? Like, what the hell are we going to do with Chris Paul's contract? They took care of it, you know? And, yes, I know the irony of now Chris Paul playing the way he is, but I think Morey has this capacity to pull these moves out of his butt, like when nobody expects there to a move to be there. So I guess I don't expect any specific thing, but I expect something with a certain amount of ingenuity to occur.
Look, Daryl is way smarter than I am and way better at constructing an NBA roster than I am. So that I sit here and say I don't see what the move is coming from a very it's coming from a very remedial place when it comes to doing what Daryl does at an NBA Ivy League type of level. Seth, I just don't know. The big move would be somehow moving Russell Westbrook's contract, and I don't know where – you're right. Maybe, that OKC move didn't look like it was possible, but then all of a sudden Paul George leaves to go to L.A. because Kawhi wants to go to L.A. and the dominoes start to fall. Maybe something shows itself. I just wonder if the next big move is moving James Harden, and I don't know that that makes you a better team. I don't know that James Harden gets you to a title, but I don't think moving him makes you a more competitive basketball team, at least in the short term. So
I saw LaMarcus Aldridge up too.
What are you thinking of trading for him?
I'm just thinking about a big man with a genuinely tall guy who can hit a mid-range jumper.
The feathery, soft elbow jumper. Yeah, that would be nice.
He's 35 already. My God,
is he really
getting old? Yeah,
LaMarcus Aldridge is 35 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. That makes me
feel like we're doing. He just found out he died or something.
I died.
Like, honestly, that type of player, whether it's LaMarcus Aldridge or somebody else, is like a big man that can shoot, that has some range. You know, a Gasol type, an aging Gasol back when he was still somebody like that. A player in that mold could be a relatively economical way to kind of make this offense more versatile again.
All right. I know that we would never overreact on Sports Talk Radio. It's just not what we do. We're very rational and very thoughtful, and we put a lot of prudent consideration into things that we say. But There are a few things that maybe should 100% scare the hell out of us when it comes to that game last night between the Texans and the Chiefs. What are they? We'll get into them next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.